honorable members, Public Service Commission, support staff and guests. Unfortunately, the chairperson of the committee, Mr. Poma Satire, will not be able to be at Parliament for the duration of this week. In terms of rule 130 of the Rules of the National Assembly, we have to elect an acting chairperson. Can I have any suggestions? Ms. Manana?
Thank you, Acting Chair. I second the honorable member. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kwabaza.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the meeting of the Standing Committee on Appropriations. We today are meeting the Public Service Commission who are going to make a presentation in respect of the appropriation bill. Let me just quickly check. Besides the apology of the chairperson, who else? No, they didn't have any other apology. Can I ask someone to move for the adoption of the agenda? Honorable Nalum?
Thank you, Chair. I move for the adoption of the agenda.
Honorable Nalungu, move. Seconder? Honorable Madoka. Thank you very much. Let's get straight to the presentation by the Public Service Commission.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, my name is Commissioner Zamanda from the Public Service Commission. We are honored to have been invited again by this important committee to present on a number of areas that we've been asked to present on as a commentary and as advice to this good committee on the 2015 Appropriation Bill. May I take just this opportunity quickly to introduce the colleagues that are supporting me this morning. On my left is Mr. Umlani Dembe, who is the Deputy Director of Monitoring and Evaluation and the Commission, and Ms. Nazipi Wokaza, who is our Parliamentary Officer. Let me up front apologize for the stillness of the delegation. We are responding to the call by the Minister of Finance, who's giving guidance to all of us in this public place to say where there are delegations, let's try and limit them so that we save on the resources from the sector. So it's for this reason. Last time there were two commissioners, this time around there's only one commissioner. I'm sure it will make this committee happy that we are doing that. without much further ado, let me, I don't want to restate the mandate because it is very, this very August House that drafted and approved the constitution. So it is our mandate is well known, but we just restate it purely for the purposes of contextualizing our input. And also just reminding ourselves that much of the questions are broad, which we've been asked to address, we are limiting our advice and our recommendation to the committee in the context of what we do. We are a body that is vested with a custodial oversight on the possibilities of the public service. And we investigate also administration practices. We've been requested by the committee to comment on a link between the 2015 Appropriation Bill and the principles of efficiency, economic investment, to identify areas where efficiency is made realized, and to identify opportunities within national government where significant potential value for money can be realized, and potential strategies for finding efficiencies in the public sector wage bill, and the extent to which the appropriation bill gives effect to the National Development Plan policy objectives. And we are quick to make a disclaimer on that one, Chairperson, because we believe in order to be able to comment meaningfully in that area, which require extensive research capability. So we did not really address that, and we believe that an institution like the Human Sciences Research Council could guide the committee better in that area. And we've also been asked to mention any other areas of work that the committee could consider. As indicated, we don't really have comprehensive research on all the topics, so the comments then should be viewed with this limitation in mind. However, we have a body of information that could assist the committee because as part of our mandate, we have developed capabilities in the context of monitoring and evaluating the extent to which the public administration fits to the 9 values outlined in the Constitution. So that enables us to be able to comment on those areas. Where appropriate, our input, we refer to the PSC reports that relate to issues at hand. Government spending plans are largely focused on achieving objectives that are set out on the MTSF, which were derived from the NDP. And as we can see, the fastest growing item in the budget is goods and services the lowest, reflecting somewhat of a shift towards investment. Apart from the priorities of education, health, local development, and rural development and social infrastructure and economic development, the Minister of Finance highlighted 9 strategic priorities that will be pursued this year. We do not, however, in this presentation, necessarily delve on commentary in detail on that. In talking through the link between the 2015 Appropriation Bill and the principles of efficiency, economy, and effectiveness, just please allow us to just outline some of these concepts and the way that we understand them in our work. Efficiency, we see efficiency being the relationship between the input, which is the resource use, and the cost of that input and the output arising out of that. Effectiveness as being achieving the intended effect or the outcome. And value for money, similarly, and referring to the relationship between resources expended and the value of the outputs and outcomes produced. Therefore, 2 of the questions posed in the brief are dealt with jointly, namely identifying areas where efficiencies may be realized and identifying opportunities with potential for value for money. economy is about the cost of inputs, and since salaries are the biggest input, this will be addressed under the strategies of finding efficiency in the public sector wage bill. Where we deal with this area, Chairperson and honorable members, we are mindful of the fact that it is a very sensitive area, and often the areas that are cost drivers may be products of bargaining agreements, but also we are mindful of the fact that we are also looking forward to the work of the Global Commission that has been given a huge task of looking at this area holistically and beginning to suggest and recommend lasting solutions as to how we can look at this area going forward. An indicator that has become well established is the relationship between the percentage of output achieved and the percentage of the budget spent. However, it is not a direct relationship in the sense of knowing that if you put this X amount with more in spend, this will then lead to X number of additional outputs. Since the indicator measures whether predetermined objectives or targets have been achieved, the indicator is heavily dependent on the accuracy of the target setting without taking into consideration other limitations. Nevertheless, the indicator gives a good sense of efficiency in the public service. The assurance Parliament has about this accuracy of these numbers has also increased since the Auditor General started auditing the performance information provided by departments in their annual report. The indicator does not say much about effectiveness since the outcome data is seldom provided in annual reports and may not be demonstrable in the short term. We are suggesting that perhaps this is the one area that this committee and other committees of the House could continue to provide oversight so that there is improvement in the meaningfulness of the information in the annual report, so that therefore you are able to measure as to what impact was derived from putting a certain amount of resources rather than just counting activities. We provide here, we're not going to talk to it in detail. The committee can use that as just a tool for oversight or a tool for analysis. We just make note of the fact that the percentage of national government that managed to achieve more than 80% of their planned targets has increased considerably from the 2011-2012 financial year to 2013-2014 financial year. The departments have achieved a high level of predictability in the budget spend, an average of 98% spending of their budgets across the board for the third financial year. The challenge, however, is to increase the efficiency of spending and the quality of the output of service delivery. The percentage of planned output achieved can be increased by proper target setting, redesigning the delivery model and processes, and by performance management. Performance management should be improved at both the organizational level and the individual staff assessment level. That is very important because if that balance is not struck, you find that there are more individuals who get performance bonuses, but there is nothing to show at organizational level that there has been delivery. The organizational level entails better measurement of unit performance as to what each unit contributes to the project. Appropriate management action includes consequences for poor performance, but even more importantly, giving managers the authority and the means to take the necessary steps to improve performance. To improve this will require careful design of organization structures to better align responsibility, authority, and accountability. Some of the work that we do as the Public Service Commission and that we've recently done and leading up to our developmental state conference was really to look back and say, 20 years down the line, how have we done in this area? and we've made concrete recommendations as to how we can align organizational structure, responsibility, authority, and accountability going forward. At the level of individual self-assessment, there are many problems with the performance management system. We have a discussion document which arrives out of the work that I've just referred to, which really makes fundamental recommendations around how this can be reorganized and how it can be changed so that this very important tool begins to do what it's supposed to do, measure the contribution of departments and individuals in them to realize value for money. I'm not going to talk through that graph, I'm just showing just how much of a problem it is across the public service. I'd like to talk following from the issue of performance and performance agreement, the issue of just ensuring that the ceiling of performance agreement by HOD is actually monitored and it's done. Because that is the one tool that allows right at the top of each department to set the tone that performance management is a must do. So we also give information there for purposes of just oversight how we are doing in that area. But why we're raising this is because if we are making comments and recommendations to this committee about some of the things that need to be done to make sure that the appropriation bill is effective, it's used economically, and it is effective. This is the one important tool that can be used, not just for purposes of whether people have signed the tick box, but it is a scientific tool that says, now that the strategy is in place, to what extent is the head of the department doing what he or she is supposed to do to progressively realize the objective of this, so that if nothing is happening, problems are detected early enough before people go out there and complain about service delivery and waste a lot of resources. With that, giving you a sense of how this has evolved over years, and we believe this committee together with other committees of parliament can play an important role to oversee this as an important part of making sure that we use all the tools available that the money that has been budgeted for is being spent effectively. When you look at the spending areas where efficiencies may be realized and opportunities of significant potential value, we just recall what the minister said in the budget speech, referring to the areas of cost measures. Cost-cutting measures is one area that really can, if adhered to, can begin to give opportunities and have a potential for realizing value for money. They've issued a number of directives ranging from catering to travel, and in each those are observed and are monitored, that they are observed, there lies an opportunity. And compliance in the above measures is supposed to be reported to the Auditor General, and there is another institution that we also support in this regard. So the first area and opportunity really is sticking to the letter of the cost-cutting measures. What's good about them is that we have a shared understanding right across the public service as what it is that needs to be done, and it can be measured. Another important area that is an opportunity is efficiencies at a micro level and turnaround times in payment and service delivery. One might ask, how does that provide an opportunity? delays in delivering services that have been planned have a whole lot of spiral effects on the budget. Because sometimes costs escalate and you find that they are budget overruns, particularly in certain sectors such as construction and so forth. So keeping to the service delivery turnaround time has an impact on the budget. Likewise, the payment of invoices on time also has an impact. And if that is done within the 30 days that it's supposed to be, it cuts a whole lot of unnecessary resource wastage. Right from the escalation because of the lateness of payment to the challenges, even including cost challenges, where payments are not done and finite resources are diverted in a whole range of areas. Again, we're just providing that graph for the purposes of a tool for oversight for the committee to see how we have done in the previous years. I must say there seems to be a bit of a reduction by 2014, but that's not good enough. We've done a lot of work here to drill down as the PSC after the President mentioned this issue a number of times in the budget State of the Nation address to see what exactly are the causes of these delays. And the Committee on the Public Service and Administration is going to have hearings in June on this matter. We show here the value of the invoices that and are paid within 30 days and the impact that in terms of lateness. So there is one potential area and an opportunity that the committee can provide oversight. Never mind the impact, the negative impact that it has in terms of sustainability of SMEs, which is, I think, in terms of negative impact on one of the key strategic areas of government, which is job creation. I mentioned the fact that there will be new hearings with another area, and I think this committee might be interested in the outcomes of those hearings that will be coming. Another area which is in the area of our oversight, it is the area of financial misconduct. Here, we've identified this area because it has an opportunity for efficiency in that if it relates to the extent to which the public service is able to recoup monies that have been spent due to financial misconduct cases. This is a huge area and potential for efficiency and effectiveness, because if those monies can be recouped, and there are a lot of mechanisms in the PFMA to do that, then it will save the state a lot of resources. Currently, the indicators monitored by the PSC do not really allow us to identify areas for efficiency saving opportunities for value for money and in the true sense of rand and cent. However, the net lines reflect the studies conducted by the PSC in the last 2 years, which have huge implications for efficiency, effectiveness, and value for money. Just the three of them, we've done research and work on the PPP as a model for delivery, but we focus only in the health sector around hospitals. Secondly, we've done work around outsourcing of government services and this whole area of coordination. We have lifted these three reports, these three areas, because we believe that the committee may, in looking at the outcome of these reports, may actually find a lot of areas where efficiencies potentially and opportunities can actually, and value for money can actually be identified. Just talking to them one by one. I'm saying, based on our experience in this area of research, and of course,
I would like the committee to be mindful that we only did it in one sector. For it to be conclusive, it might need to be done in the other sectors as well. This is a very important way of delivering services. However, it shouldn't be seen as a panacea, because if it's applied just as a panacea, it has a potential of using, buying a Rolls Royce in order to get to an intended outcome where you can get into a ditto and get into the same place. What do I mean? What I mean is that when we discovered in looking at the PPPs in the private sector, they actually need, in the health sector, they need to be monitored, because you may want to deliver a state-of-the-art facility, but if you don't look at the entire provision in the whole province as to how then you make sure that all of the other services are at that level, you might have one island of excellence in a sea of poor service delivery. So we are just saying this area needs to be monitored closely, and perhaps Treasury can do a lot through their unit to monitor very closely that the challenges associated with this are minimized. We're not just cutting it down, but we're just saying it can be used only in selected areas. On the area of outsourcing, what we found is that in the absence of the guidelines as to when to outsource and when you don't outsource, there is a tendency of outsourcing areas that are core in the functions of government, and there are already human resources that should actually be fulfilling that function. So you are paying people who are supposed to be fulfilling that function, and at the same time you have outsourced it, and hence the expenditure that has increased exploitation in that area. There lies an opportunity where also economies, value for money, and economies of state can be realized. We're showing there how also in the core of use of consultants has also had an impact in this. In some of the sectors, you find that the public service, public servants who've been in the same sector come out of the sector of the department and come back as consultants as twice or three times the cost. So it needs to be monitored very closely. We're not saying that there won't be areas where government may need special expertise, which they may not be able to keep long term, but there must be strict guidelines. Another piece of work we have done is the whole area of collaboration. We drilled down on the area of rural development, which sort of cut across the three spheres. That sometimes there are more resources put into coordinating the work across the three spheres when people exist already in this sphere, national, provincial, and local. Instead of making those structures work effectively, sometimes we put more resources to actually coordinating them. So we're saying if the committee could look into this area sector by sector and see where these practices exist and begin to advise. In these three reports, committee members will be quite happy if the committee is interested in one or two of the reports to be able to drill down and share with you. But otherwise, we can just send all of the three reports to the committee. We can quite happily be used as an oversight tool, so that the detailed room of recommendations we've made in those reports can provide the committee with a meaningful tool for oversight. The budget indicated that any additions to personnel count when it comes to the wage bill will be paid from the existing allocation. The wage bill depends largely on the level of wages, the distribution of post between the higher grade posts, the size of the establishment, and so forth. We are suggesting here that perhaps, notwithstanding the fact that the wage bill is a product of intense bargaining and agreement, perhaps there are areas that can be looked at, such as the whole area of job grading, and see whether we can revisit the way we have decentralized it so that there's some kind of uniformity right across the system. There is a potential there. We have made this concrete recommendation, which we're going to be discussing with the Department of Public Service and Administration and presenting to the Committee on Public Service and Administration as part of our developmental stage report. Efficiencies also can be realized in the area of the HR. Again, very much an area that is in our radar, such as suspension. We have picked up that in the area of managing discipline, particularly long suspensions that are more than 30 days, which shouldn't. That's one area where efficiencies can be realized in the wage bill by cutting this, because if you have a lot of people who are staying for months and sometimes for years being paid doing nothing, then there lies the wastage. Again, I won't talk the detail to that graph. It's merely indicative in terms of how we're doing in that area. And how much, when, and what the impact and the cost are related with that. Yes, there seems to be efforts to reduce it, but the cost related to suspension in 2013-2014 alone still remain relatively high, to the tune of 34 million, as a way of indicating why we highlighted this area being the one that is to be looked at. We just outlined some of the areas there, such as what can be done, you know, holistically at a macro level. And the most important thing that we highlight is that it shouldn't be just the government departments that we are looking at. It should really be right across even institutions, sub-10 institutions like ourselves, the judiciary, and everybody ought to be looking at the whole area of our mandate. And it's quite comforting that the Department of Justice Portfolio Committee is beginning in the area of constitutional institutions are beginning to challenge us very hard to say, how do you understand your mandate? How much do you stick to your mandate so that you don't creep into the mandates of others? You are able to do with the resources that you have a meaningful impact while remaining strictly in your mandate. And I think it's one area where committees of parliament can engage quite seriously with government departments to say, are you sticking strictly to what you are supposed to do? Just very quickly, the concluding remarks are really just a summary of what you said so far. It is encouraging to know that overall, the percentage national departments that managed to achieve more than 80% of its determined objectives has improved. The percentage of planned outputs achieved can be increased by proper target setting, and not activity setting, but target setting. This is what we're going to do, because if we do this, we will produce so many services. Performance management at the organizational level, so that there is better balance between the individual and the organizational performance. Appropriate management action, which includes consequences for poor performance, but most importantly, giving managers that space to improve in that area. Perhaps some of the things about the wage bill, we might require some administrative reforms on a much broader front, and should not only necessarily focus directly on the wage bill. Areas such as job grading and the growth of the food in the establishment which sometimes multiply may actually then need to be dealt with. Of course, in that whole area of outsourcing, maybe may be appropriate, but it can't be done alongside with four core services. It is quite interesting to know that the Department of Health is beginning to look at this quite seriously, to say what exactly do we outsource, and if we outsource in this way, what do we need? But I just want to just do a party shot on this outsourcing thing, Catherine, as I draw to the close, to say that it seems from the research that we have done in the experience, this area really needs to be overseen quite tightly. Because sometimes it's quite easy to say, let us outsource areas such as cleaning and what have you. But you also need to say, what is the impact of what, of that, not just now on the random sense now, but in the impact of the debt that you create for the state going further. Now it's easy to say, let's outsource those areas, but those people in the end, because you have outsourced them, they actually become dependent on the state later. So even when you look at what is it that you do in that area, it mustn't be short-sighted. It must be, if we do this and we realize efficiencies now, what deficiencies do we cause later, which will still have a burden on the system. Thank you.
Thank you for the input. I don't know whether in your team there is anyone who wants to make a question or want to question. All right. Well, here is the presentation. It's your time to raise your questions and narrative and comments. Anyone who wants to start? Honorable Mazop is first. All right. Honorable Ma will be next. For now, the two will start.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. One is to welcome the detailed report that we have received, and we appreciate because it opens our eyes on some of the issues we need really to play oversight on. One is just being a concern around the issue of the lack of information on the performance contract. Really, it's a great concern, because if you look at even in the previous years, it has not been moving, and one wonders how do people get performance bonuses if there are no performance contracts. And I think I raised this before, and I will continue to raise this. The way one look at the issue of the performance contract, it is not practical, really, to say that the ministers must monitor the issue of the performance contract or do the performance contract with the accounting officers. I'm not sure what would be the take of the Public Service Commission, maybe if, as a commission, if this can be done by the Public Service Commission, because you know they are what experts, they understand, you know, and it's not that the ministers don't understand, but the load of the work that they are having, you know, it can become so difficult for them to really focus on this issue of the performance contract. But also, if we are saying that we want to see the efficiency in the department, without a performance contract, it will be so difficult because you can't hold any person accountable as the report is recommending to say that there must be consequences for non-performance. If you have got no performance contract, how are you going to be held accountable for something that you have done? Really, it is really a concern. And also, I think the work that the commission has done is really commendable because you know we have been discussing the challenges on the issue of the wage bill. You know, few days within our committee having a concern around this thing. And the recommendations that you really and the pinpointing of the challenges around the issue of the wage bill, I think it will assist the committee going forward if we can make those proposals. The other issue was around the issue of the outsourcing that I want to comment on. I 100% agree with the commission. This issue of outsourcing, the core business of the department is really unacceptable. And I think the consequences that the commission has indicated, I really agree with it to say that it's something that we need to look at if we are going to deal with this issue of the industry. I know that it is really sensitive, as the commissioner has correctly indicated, but we really need to look at it going forward. The other issue is the issue of the outsourcing. You know, this thing of outsourcing, I was wondering, I don't know which thing, the issue of the government. You know, this thing of the hospital buying, but doesn't have enough funds, you know, to buy. What pushes this thing? This thing of privatization, really, is something that needs to come to a stop, especially in the department. We understand where they don't have real skills to deal with it, but also they must create capacity and skills. It is our responsibility to do that. We can't shift the bus. You know, this government is buying a Rolls Royce that it cannot afford. Why? You know, these are some of the things really that we have to look at it. We support a public-private partnership, but also we must look at the implications. And also, what is it that the government is going to gain out of that private partnership? We must not enter into private partnership where there is limitation on the gain by the department, and then we leave to private sector because we always work for the profit. And also, these accounting officers, really, there must be consequences as the commission has recommended. We always say that. But really, I think it will be done when there is a performance contract to hold a person accountable. I was in the constituency yesterday. I found that the community wanted a school, but the school is lying empty now, is not yet occupied. I was asking why there is a person that is employed, applied for a position, is an inspector, but he can't, you know, put the kids in the school. You know, it's such people that really they should be the consequences for what they're doing, really. I want to really appreciate, as usual, when we meet with a public service commission, I think the detail of the report and point to important issues for us as people that are supposed to do oversight on the department, really I think it's of great assistance. I think we understand where the challenges that need to be taken in the government. Thank you very much for the presentation, Commissioner and the team.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for that presentation. It was very informative, and indeed I think it will give this committee a credit to share on the way forward. A few questions, or clarity maybe. I think my colleague here has alluded to some of them in terms of the poor performance and consequences. If you could elaborate on what do you think is the way forward and what should actually happen, because it seems to be a national problem. Especially on the ground, it would appear that there's a serious challenge in terms of no consequences, and for that reason, you know, continue year in and year out. The issue of the, which is a major concern, is the late payments. I don't know if you could perhaps, in investigation, what have you found out? What are the causes? What can be done about it in terms of that? Because I'm not convinced that people who provide service don't want to get paid. I'm sure they would probably more often than not do everything possible to try and get paid, as soon as possible. That was my next one. Okay, let's get to these ones. In terms of those that where the sales agreements were not actually signed, what would you say was the reason for them not being signed timely? And to what extent have any of these so-called managers benefited in terms of bonuses and things? And how did you establish what they were entitled to? And who's, because I think my colleague to a certain extent alluded to that. But importantly, if you could get a picture of how many of these people who did not sign these other agreements but received bonuses, and to what extent. In terms of the misconduct cases, the numbers are quite high, although I think you have dropped from 2011. I don't think this is the final figure. I noticed that everything going on is up to 2013, 2014. So we don't know what the status really is on the last financial year. But in terms of this, do you have a picture as to what was recovered from these people, especially those that were found to be negligent or misappropriated and things? I think I'm asking one question, and I don't know how I should actually phrase it. Where, in the 3 tiers of government, from national, provincial, and local, where do you really find the serious challenges of this non-compliance? Where is the major portion of the problems they seem to be sitting? And who do you believe is actually responsible for that, and what actually should we be doing to try and turn that around? There's one problem that I have, and from what I'm experiencing, audit general, clean audit, unqualified audit, all based on documentation that is provided. And I must agree that my concern is the accuracy of the documentation, which is not actually checked, because you base your findings on the documentation that are provided. And I can tell you that if you find the right person who knows what to do, he will provide you, he'll tell you what you want to hear. So he will provide the documentation to get the cleaning up even if it's not clean. So that for me is a problem. We've spoken about the invoices. Things we have spoken on systems. You are talking about the monitoring and tracking down the payment of service providers. I don't know how and who do you believe should be actually implementing this at one level to ensure compliance. The staff who proved to be inadequate, and obviously you only find the staff till you employ them, and I always said a CV means nothing because you can make a CV to satisfy your needs. What is our recourse when you find those that you've appointed are just inadequate to the task, they can't perform, and that is why we are outsourcing, and it's a challenge because you'll be paying on the one hand and then you're outsourcing and then to get the job, and so that is a problem. You could actually elaborate on that for me. Let me stop there for now, Chair.
Honorable Tashik. Honorable Marana.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Just a question for clarification, yeah? I noticed some of the slides, and I might be wrong here, might be just a little ineffective today. Some of the slides are headed to 2015 and some 2014. Is that correct? I just wanted to make sure that is the case. So, just for clarification regarding that. Then, if I start with the slides, and I have some issues for clarification, I have some questions. Slide number 8 deals with the this performance bonus. I've just got a serious concern with the performance bonus now. My view, and I might be right here, is the government is non-profit. government is performing on a deficit on an annual basis. So why people in a non-profit entity still get bonuses, I cannot understand why they do that for doing their job. Perhaps we should get it the other way around. It's when they don't comply or they don't perform, they should rather be penalized. That might be a better way of ensuring that the job is done properly. So I just have a concern regarding bonuses. So, slide number 10. This has been covered by the two previous colleagues here. The compliance rate of these performance dependents, and it was discussed last year at the presentation. It's still at 65%, which is way too low for government employees to perform or to comply at that level. So that is a serious concern. Slide number 11, which is a similar concern regarding the evaluations of heads of departments. I mean, how do they get paid? So how do we know that they were given at work if none of them were evaluated? So it is problematic when you see something like that. Then slide number 12, which deals with the heads of department evaluation. I noticed in a column, well, any one of the columns there, but there are a number of heads of department that do not qualify for evaluation. Can we just get clarity on that one? Clarification on that? Why didn't qualify? Slide number 13. Slide number 13. Oh, yeah, this deals with the central supply database. Now, I am of the view that is going to be problematic, especially for your regional and your smaller suppliers. I understand the objective is for efficiency, etc., but, you know, and I remember I raised this before, and I was told by the Minister of Finance then that, yes, no, I mustn't underestimate the smaller suppliers. They do have computers and so forth, and so they do have the infrastructure, but I am seriously, it hasn't been implemented, I am seriously concerned that that will definitely affect the payment. Already we have problems of payment over 30 days, and I believe that is going to cause a bigger problem, because what you'll find is that at least now the suppliers are able to go to their regional office or the local municipality to go and wait for a check. This way it's not going to be possible. So for me, I believe it's definitely going to disadvantage your SMEs. Slide number 15, I just get an explanation on what is meant by the average hand value of invoices paid after 30 days. Because I see an amount of 389 million. Now, does that mean average hand value per invoice or the average hand value for that year? So, good. That's the one in slide 15. Slide number 17. Just a question. There's an analysis we've done on that. I noticed in 2011, there was a peak in the number of misconduct cases. Oh, they're not 660. What was the analysis done into that? And then, if you look at the next slide, I noticed then that even though there's a peak then, the average number of misconduct seems to be about 260, somewhere there, or if you average it out. But there doesn't seem to be a correlation between the number of invoices and the value of the amount involved. You know, that is a little strange to me. So, and obviously as a PSC, they might have looked into that. And then the last slide, Honorable Chair, that I would like to refer to is slide number 26, which... Oh, okay, well, that's also about correlation. The good point that you've made, you've observed that it should be noted, there seems to be no direct correlation between the number of official suspended and the cost now. Is there any explanation for that, please? Thank you. Thanks so much for your question.
Honorable Mahana.
For the opportunity, let me also join those welcome and the presentation. It is really a very informative presentation and an eye-opener. I have two questions, three in fact, that relate to this presentation.
The first one is with regards to the late payment. You have indicated that there are those who are paid invoice paid after 30 days, and invoices older than 30 days not paid. Maybe I think you do have some facts with regards to this. Why are these invoices are not paid? Precisely because the president has been saying this many a time that people need to be paid for. But we are not getting what is the causes why people are being paid as soon as possible. That's one. The second one is with regard to the issue that you raised about outsourcing of services, especially even cleaning services. Really, the eye-opener that this issue, if we are not addressing it now, later we'll be experiencing some problems. All those people are going to be on a pension. It is now important that people are employed so that they can contribute to their own pension. So the issue of labor brokers is a serious matter that needs to be looked at. I fully agree with your conclusion. Those points that we have raised, that they need to take them very seriously. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Just a few comments from me on slide 8, where you on the second last bullet, the managers often feeling powerless to act. Is it? I raise this because it's an issue that has been raised time and again. Is it our policies that are making them powerless to act? Or are they simply lacking capacity to attack? I don't know what, I mean, somebody might not really have the edge to act. Is it that? Is it our policies? Is it both? Because otherwise we will not be able to get to a stage when we say that we have an efficient and a capable state. If people are put in positions of responsibility, like managers, can't put things right where their subordinates are not doing the correct thing. I think that something needs to be done. If it is our policy, let's look at them and let's review them. On slide 20, where you make reference to government probably being state of the art health facilities through the PDP, and yet not maintaining the existing one. It's an issue that I think the first time we met the Department of Health, I think it was when we looked at their first quarter of performance. They did make this point, that they have a problem, particularly in the provinces, where you get a new clinic built next to the old one, which could have been revamped and made more efficient in terms of service provision. Now it raises this question of, first, the intergovernmental relationship. How strong is that? Pit it against the intergovernmental fiscal relationship. Because if And you see that a huge chunk of national funds are transferred to the provinces and local government. So to what extent are part of the intergovernmental fiscal relations tight. Tight enough to ensure that transfer funds are used for purposes that better deliver services to our people in an efficient and economic manner. Because otherwise, if we don't do that, then we'll get this road point where we could have driven a bit, as you say, to get to the end destination. So it raises other questions, which eventually come back to the issue of efficient and economic use of state funds. The but the issue of evaluating the managers has reflected that it has been, quite frankly, limited through the financial year. Probably because they are supposed to be evaluated by ministers who themselves have a whole lot of things to do. And I honestly, I don't think that they have time to evaluate the senior manager. Would it be possible to perhaps transfer this function to the Office of the Auditor General, who would be able to deal with that subject? I say this because perhaps we should also ask the question, is it possible for us to see what are the villagers that evaluated against? Because, I mean, we know there are performance contracts. We don't know what it is that is in the performance contracts which tells us now as this committee, or even the Portfolio Committee on Finance, if you were to evaluate the senior manager, this is what you would be looking at, which at the end of the day will tell you these objectives were achieved and the services did to each other. That's one area. But linked to that, there are no guarantees that if you are efficient in evaluating the senior manager, that translates to efficiency on the ground. So what are their responsibilities in relation to evaluating their subordinate down to the ground? Because that is where the effect of government spending has got to be effectively felt. Thank you.
Sorry, Jim, I will ask a few questions. Thank you, sir. I don't want to belabor the point any more than it needs belaboring. But last year when the PSC came and presented to us, I remember having a bit of an issue with Professor Levine at the time over this issue of the fact that the managers hadn't submitted their quadrants. What steps were being taken? I explained at the time that the PSC doesn't have any punitive mandate. You can't actually take any steps against people, but surely something should have been done in the meantime. The fact that we have seen exactly the same situation, it's all 65%, says to me absolutely nothing has been done. I don't know what the situation is, what action you would take. I mean, obviously, when you go in there, your job is to monitor, and that's what you're doing. You come up to see the problems are there, but what happens from there? Can you just explain to us the processes? I'd like to understand why there doesn't seem to be any change in this. Surely something should have improved in the meantime. Is there something we can do as a committee to try and get that change to happen? On slide 8, I've spent through the slides I have in front of me now. I noticed that now the third last bullet point. I'm very happy to see the wording in there, giving managers the authority and means to take all necessary steps to improve performance. I would very much like to see managers empowered. You know, we often told the story about the two words that made America great, you're fired. We can't do that in this country because our laws don't allow it. If the managers had that ability, they're probably a lot more effective. If that's somewhere's not performance, you're out of here, you're gone. That would make people perform, but they don't want to be fired. Nobody wants to lose their job. Is there something we can tweak here to try and improve that situation?
The chairperson mentioned about why is it that managers seem to feel that they don't have this power. I just want to make a sort of proposal. It's not applicable in every situation, I know, but I was once in a situation where we were doing a financial investigation on a woman who was employed in the government service, and she came to court and she was asked how much money she earned every month, and she told the court she was earning 16,000 a month, and the court said, then why can't you afford to pay your debt? And she said, well, she had to pay half her salary to her manager because he had got her the job. It turned out that he had got 10 people jobs in his department, and each one of them was paying him half their salaries because he had got a job for them. Obviously, that was not going to be too hard on the people working, because then he might lose the people there who are paying him money every month. I'm just wondering, do we monitor this kind of thing? Do we actually have a look at the reasons why things are the way they are? You know, it's often easy to just see the surface level, but if we dig a little, we might find all sorts of interesting and alarming things. Just something that came up in my mind when you spoke about that, sir. Well, slide 10, I think I mentioned already. Yes, about what steps have been taken, and slide 11 as well. Slide 14. You first an indication here of the number of invoices paid after 30 days and the number of invoices that were older than 30 days that were not paid. I would like to have been able to see how many invoices were paid within the 30-day period so that we can have a comparison. Are we paying 10% of them in time, or 5%, or 100%? Well, obviously not 100%, but we could be paying 80% of them in time. We don't know, because we don't know all of the numbers. We just have some of the numbers. And then the same would apply again to the, I think it's the next slide, yes. Slide 15, where it says that the values again. What was the value on average of the invoices that were paid within the 30-day period? I think that would give us a better idea of how efficiently we are dealing with the situation overall. On slide 17, when I saw this graph at first, I thought, gee, look at that. 2011-12, 660 cases, and then the next year drops 241. And I thought to myself, well, either things improved radically in between those 2 years, or somebody was jumping on the whistleblowers, because it put people off making these reports. And perhaps that will happen again. I know it's a negative connotation, but it could well be why it stopped. When it got so high, the people who were making the reports, or those who were guilty, suddenly got penalized or victimized in some way, and they stopped doing that. And that's why these numbers dropped so much. And I wonder whether there was any way we could check on that. Slide 18, I noticed that, excuse me, the amounts not recovered, the large amounts, you know, obviously these amounts are prescribed because they're older than 3 years now. But is any further action being taken on this recovery, or we just decided, well, we can't do anything more about it now? It's sort of over, we've lost the money and let's move on, or are we still continuing to take action to try and recover those monies? Slide 22. Slide 26 was my last one. It's just in the first bullet point there, you say that suspensions affect the wage bill because officials are paid whilst on leave and costs may be incurred. Does that mean they're paid while they're on suspension? On leave would indicate to me that it's a normal paid leave situation, but if it's while they're on suspension, it has to be rather than while they're under suspension rather than while they're on leave, because on leave is the normal situation, we presume that you would be paid. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Chair,
thank you very much, Chairperson, and thankful to the Commission for the well-thought presentation. I think I've been covered by comrades and friends. What I need to say is that we really need those three reports, if we can have them. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have responses now.
Thank you very much, honorable members. The sessions themselves have actually been quite encouraging, and some of the questions we will attempt to respond to now. Others pertain to the content of improving the content of our presentation for the future, and others are asking quite pertinently the specific issues based on our experiences. If the honorable members allow, since the kind of questions are sort of thematic, a lot of them about payment of 30 days and so forth, if the honorable members allow me, if I could just address those thematically and not address each honorable member. And if at all I miss out on something that an honorable member would have raised that didn't fall in the category art, I'll be quite happy to be pointed to that. Just first of all, about the content of the presentation, we apologize. There was a typo in terms of consistently referring to 2015 appropriation bill rather than 2014. We're sorry about that. And also the issue that the honorable member mentioned around in future we must demonstrate where things have been done, like the payment and so forth. But all in all, we are quite encouraged by these comments, honorable member. Let me deal with the thematic area. I will ask Pulani to assist right at the end. Let me deal with thematic areas as they have been outlined by the honorable members. The third one is around 30-day payment. You know, there's nothing, just as a commissioner, and as a commission as a whole, there's nothing that gets the blood of the commission as a collective to boil as this issue. And the reason why we identified it as one of the projects in the area that I'm responsible for is because, like government departments, we also analyze the data of the national address and say, what are the areas that are pointing out to us in terms of our monitoring and evaluation and oversight? And this one sort of stuck up like a sore thumb. So, first of all, I need to acknowledge the work that has been done by government right now, where they are really looking at it. The patterns of performance monitoring and evaluation are driving it through the foresight clusters and so forth. But we felt, let us drill down. You know, the reasons we found ranged from irritatingly nonsensical to quite serious ones. Some were really about just downright laziness of officials in supply chain. You know, things like officials thinking that because there's a policy to pay within 30 days, it means you have to wait for 30 days to pay. Now, you've had a meeting already attended by people that have been services supplied, and the person has given an appropriate invoice with an order number, and the invoice just sits on your desk. And that service provider phones at least 5 times to say, where is my invoice now? Or we have to be paid in 30 days. I mean, that's ridiculous. Now, that also points to management deficiency. Now, if you are a manager in supply chain and you are supervising a team of officials whose duty is to pay, what do you meet with your team and talk about? Except to say, show me which invoices you've paid today, why not? Are there problems? Let's solve it. So it sort of spirals right up to management. The second one was much more systemic. You find that somebody gets a provider, gets a tender to build houses. And this person does not have all of the
scale. So we get provided to do plumbing, electricity, and so forth. But in the actual agreement, these other providers are not really directly contracted to government. So the person, the owner of the construction company, wins the tender. But in fact, outsourcing to those other providers actually is not making that process visible to the department concerned. Now, what we found, because we didn't just do the hearings, what we found is that the people who were most vocal, we moved province to province with these hearings, the people who were most vocal at our hearings, we collected a database of them, went back to each and every province, each and every department to say, here are the people who say they've not been paid by you. Almost 60% of them, those departments, did not know about them. They said, we are not at all contracted to this service provider. Only there you go back to the service provider and say, the department doesn't know anything about you. So who actually subcontracted you? And you find that it is that person. So the main contract gets paid and does not pay the other people who they meet arrangements. That was one big issue. But it doesn't only involve providers only. In some instances, officials in the department try to cut corners of procurement processes and say, if you do so to have an accountant, to say, so-and-so and associate is already helping us clean out our financing. We will help us with this one quickly. We will ask them to pay you. So if the one firm of accountants has a problem, that other person that the official knowingly cut corners to bring into the work, because there is no paper trail, the official that says, well, I don't know what has happened yet. The problem then becomes, instead of department saying, we've seen work, it has been done, we will take this official to book for having transgressed the procurement processes. But that person will have to pay because there is no knowledge that this thing has been arranged. What then happens? You have a spiral of cases. That person takes the department to court and the department has no papers to the effect that they have an agreement. So I'm just saying it ranges from the nonsensical to a web of activities that happen at a departmental level and at a service provider level. But in between, because what we failed to do, we also met independently with different stakeholders. We met with organized small business, away from everybody else, to say, tell us, what are your experiences? They did not say some of the things in the big forum. They said them on the side. They said, well, in some instances between you and me, there is corruption. You find that there's an official who is being paid to pay service providers and says, I will not sign this invoice unless you grip my hand. Again, that's a product of management, because if only sharp and consistent management was monitoring these invoices have been in your system for a week now, what are you doing? Even that corruption would be cut out. Now, it takes me to the question that my honorable members have asked, to say, what is this thing that is disempowering management? There are a number of things. I think we believe that, having done our work on the developmental stage, we want to believe that we have led a bit on making sure that there is proper and consistent training right across the board, not just orientation when people join the public service, right across, consistently, continuously. When we make ask people to apply to enter the public service, the requirements are quite generic. You must have a degree, you must have this, you must have this, you must have that. But the public space, even if you are a lawyer, when you get into the public service, you've got a law degree, you know how to read the law, but you don't really know how to drive the how to supervise people and so forth, how to write a cab memo and so forth. So you actually have to be consistently trained right through the chain, from the most junior to the head of department. So we believe that some of the reluctance and the so-called power to make things happen sometimes really arises out of lack of knowledge. This is why we are suggesting in this piece of work that I referred to say maybe it's about time, apart from the training, apart from to actually even set certain exams, especially as a, when you move from one level of senior management to another, rather than just applying to be promoted, perhaps you need to even test it, what set of skills you already possess, so that you know, first of all, you enter because you already have those set of skills, but you also set up trained when you get into that. So training, that's why we welcome the effort of really reviving the National School of Government, because many of the dissertations we studied for the purpose of this actually don't leave extra time. You get trained. But we also give detailed recommendations in this 30-day parenting as to how actually we can, but fundamentally it is about management. Because even all of these mishaps could be picked up if you've got a management that is really, really focused on what they are supposed to do. The second one is why are we hearing all of these the performance management issues? How many people have signed the gotten bonuses and not signed? We don't have that information readily here, but we can go back and check on that. But the honourable member says we've had this before. What really stops you making sure that there is change? The third thing is, in terms of our mandate and our legislative framework, we recommend to the executive authority, we recommend to everybody else to change things. But finally, we are accountable to Parliament. So when we have done our work to say there is a problem here, we actually say to Parliament, if as part of your oversight, there is a problem here, so that whatever the department is coming to bring, whether it's an annual report, it's a strategy, whatever other interaction, the portfolio committee starts there. Before we talk about anything else, DG, have you signed your performance contract? When the minister is there attending, member of parliament, minister, have you signed your performance contract? Have you assessed your DG this year? So that we can actually provide that information, who has been signed, who hasn't, but I think that we really are close on that. We believe this is something that needs to be done. But again, people do need to be trained to even just do this. So we are proposing also in the curriculum of the energy that every senior management service member who enters the public service must actually be trained even just to do that. The issue around the outsourcing, I agree fully with the sentiment of the honourable member, and I think that it's something that Parliament needs to take up and engage seriously to say what exactly do we want to see as a country going forward. The issue of Madam Shopemafole, we will definitely give you the report. I went to the other Shopemafole, he was my boss when I was in the public service. Sorry about that, Shopemafole. I have a long person now. is this power to act as a result of our act or not, and if there's anything to be changed. I also think some of it is as a result of the forecast in terms of other monitoring bodies, whether it's civil society out there or parliament. The focus tends to be put very much on the executive authority. Very rarely do you actually say, wait a minute, who was the manager here who dropped the ball? Usually, I mean, even when you listen to the radio in the mornings or when you are driving, if there is no intravenous fluid in a hospital in Gauteng, when you wake up in the morning, the media go to the MEC. Let me tell you, the likelihood of the MEC knowing why the person was supposed to order intravenous fluid didn't do it, the likelihood of knowing the details is huge. But I think the entire monitoring in our country is tended to focus on the EA. Yes, finally, they are responsible, but very rarely do managers really feel the heat that their eyes are on them. And I think we need to find a way of doing that. It's something that, it's a cognitive shift that we need to find in terms of monitoring globally. But also, I'm talking here as someone who participated in the SMS right at the early stages of our democracy. You know, we got in there maybe because we wanted to prove the point that we've been put out of the management service of the public sector. In fact, the people who did that, they were wrong. We can actually perform better than them. We had a different kind of just oomph that says, you know what, I want to make a meaningful impact. This is the opportunity to demonstrate. So we need, through again the NSG, a way of always flaming the interest in the public service for people to serve with pride, so that it's not just another. It's more than just a job. It's actually a service, and we are proposing that maybe just driving the values that are in the constitution and people feeling like I'm here for more than a pebble that really can really be rekindled. I'm saying this, honourable members, because our responsibility is to oversee grievances. When the 1.2 million public servants are not happy with their grievances, they've taken them to their land manager, to the DG, to the minister, are still not happy, they come to us to adjudicate. Honestly, many of them just suggest a management service that's just, you know, sitting back and doing nothing. You find a grievance that says people are fighting because somebody is diuretic and they were not allowed an extra day of their sick day leave or sick leave. And this thing has escalated to the DG, to the minister, to the public service. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, what are we dealing with here? So I'm just thinking, Honorable Chair, it's not our act, it's not a policy, it's just something that has crept in over years, which all of us have to try and deal with. We are proposing training and a drive of, you know, instilling those values of service. But I think that is something that we really need to all come to the party and deal with. It honestly has nothing to do with the laws or policies that are stopping people from doing this.
Anyone that I left out? Late payment, performance, and what is the why bonuses? You know, at the time this was proposed, I think there was mindfulness of the fact that the public service is not a private sector where if you have produced certain rents and cents, you therefore get paid for the revenue you have generated. It was intended to incentivize people to work even harder. But the test of whether you get a bonus or not should actually really be about, yes, we are remunerating you for all you do, but you've done something, one or two things, to set you apart from your colleagues. You've innovated, you've come up with new ways of service delivery, you've brought something else. But if you do not have a management that makes sure that the tool is used properly, that a person is actually assessed every quarter, it's not just done at the end of the financial year, that's because the person has to be assessed, then it loses its meaning. As to whether or not this will be revisited, we've made our own proposal to DPSA how perhaps some of the recognition could be made to be non-monetary, so that you really save the fiscal around. We've made those proposals. We don't know whether they will be taken or not. Central supplier, the jury is out, as the honourable member said. We don't know yet because we are yet to implement it fully. I think there are pros and cons of doing things centrally and decentralizing. The correlation between the value and the number of the people who have been suspended. But before I deal with the correlation, the graph that suggests some years it was up and others was down, we are dealing with this issue. There is a regulation arising out of the PFMA that departments must report each and every incident of financial misconduct to the Public Service Commission. There is under-reporting, not that they are not dealing with it, not that it's not being done, but sometimes you wake up in the morning and you read about a misconduct case. When we look at our register, it's not there. So it's been there, it's been dealt with, it's even in court, but it's not in our register. So the entire branch that is headed by Commissioner Gosi is looking into this just to make sure that the inappropriate reporting, they actually go back to departments to check whether or not they are doing this. In terms of the number of misconduct cases versus the value, it's all about the value of each misconduct case. Sometimes the amount involved is less, and other times the amount is more. That's how far I thought I heard the question, Chairperson. I'd just like Pumlan to talk a little bit about the figures and the statistics that we keep when it comes to money recoup or not. Pumlan?
Honourable Chair and honourable members, perhaps let me first also start on the payment of invoices. I think the Commissioner has articulated some of the reasons that sort of usually there for the late payment. Most people say could be internal to the department. For example, some of the reasons are that there's not insufficient capacity. Perhaps the people dealing with the payment, one of them has left the department, or some cases you find that their systems, the best system is offline, is not functioning, and in some cases to verify even the banking details, maybe the service provider may have, during the course of doing business, have changed their banking details. So there tends to be a little bit of a delay now, but there's been a change in the banking details and so forth. Still on the payment invoices, I think there was a question around averages. And the averages are calculated according to the month. So I think the latest month we did is 2014 to date, which ended up until November. So it is a total divided by the number of months up until that period of time. And then I think there was also a question around why don't we or couldn't we have reported on invoices within the 30 days? Unfortunately, we rely on secondary data for most of the information that we report on. So National Treasury does not report on the invoices that are within the 30 days. They tend to indeed report on those that are older than 30 days paid and those older than 30 days not paid. But that it is something that we can consider going forward, because we believe it needs to offer if a well-balanced a reporting. So it's something that one can try to, will consider perhaps going forward. And then on the financial misconduct, we do also track or rather monitor the amount recovered. For example, during the 2012-13 financial year, there was an amount of about 255,000 rand that was recovered. And then 2013-14 financial year, 158,000 rand that was recovered. But this is still sort of a drop in the ocean compared to what has not been recovered. And I think we try to report more very, very concerning things. Okay, the issue of, I think there was also the issue of HOD evaluations to say, can't really remember it well, but it was asking why is it that some do not qualify. It was around those that is the correct okay. The reason is that in most cases you find that if an HOD is acting, they do not qualify for evaluations. So most the two major reasons it could be if they are acting or they haven't completed a evaluation cycle, which is a 1 full year in this case. So that is the reason for them not qualifying for evaluations. I think I've covered most of the content question. There was issue a question around the precautionary suspensions as well, to say the cost of the precautionary suspension is not really sort of correlating with the number of people. There will be a case where you find that it's also dependent on the level of the person. So you find that maybe if the person is at a lower level, the cost may not be so much as the person who's at the PSMS level. So there is really not much to say direct link. It's to say if the cases are high, then the cost should be high. It's also related to the level of the person involved. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I don't see any follow-up questions. Like we always do, yes, Honorable Shopson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to say a little about the late payments.
You know, if you go to pet store or check up, they don't knock off before they balance their payments. And today, in the civil service, we're using IT. And I would propose that, you see, if you check and you find that you can't pay me, I'm a small business, because I have changed my bank details, I would expect a very responsible, committed civil service to send me an SMS. And we always get this SMS thing from the insurance every day. I don't think it should be difficult. Because, you know, I'm saying this because as South Africans, we need to be fair. We have a problem. Our economy is not growing. The world economy is not growing. This is very serious. It is only that if we look after the small businesses that we can protect the few jobs that we need. Because if a small business does not contract, does not get money for the job that he has made, that person is not going to pay the employees. He's going to resign. And we're back to where we are. That is why. So, I think we should actually have a discussion.
action as a country on the seriousness of this economic growth that we're fighting for. We don't have options. We need to consciously fight against the lack of any job and actually make sure that we create jobs. Because, you know, if you can do a research on the number of jobs that we share as a country through this non-payment of small business, small business are running out of everything. So I think that is very clear. I hope the Commission can assist us in that it is impacting upon the department to say this is very serious. And, you know, it is something that the president, time and again, and on the face of the nation, has emphasized that we need to grow our economy. We need to do that.
Followed by
Honorable Fik. It's just a follow-up on what the Commissioner has just said when he was answering the when responding to our question. The issue of the subcontractors that do not have any contract with the government. These are small business people who are trying. And they are the ones who have done the work. And now, because they don't have any contract with government, and they are not paid, so the main contractor is the one who does not want to pay them. In most of the cases, really, the people who are doing are those people from the subcontractors who are not paid. Can I get an invitation? How can we resolve this matter? Because really, it is very rife. And at the end of the day, the people who are poor, they are the ones who are suffering the most.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I'll be frank if I don't say this. This is to the Commissioner. I've just spoken to my colleague here. Would we appreciate the forthrightness, the sincerity, and the passion with which the answers and the responses are given to our issues. So keep it up. I think she did a very good job. Thank you.
Another appreciate one.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to know from the Commission, in light of the duties that you're performing in the challenges faced by these SMEs and things in terms of payment, would you be able to, as part of your responsibility, do some kind of investigation to check whether the funding is from big companies using small companies to actually get business from us as government is continuing, and to what extent maybe that the larger industry is not helping the small companies, but basically living off these people, you know, and as a result of which you find that the smaller businesses are not really surviving, they're not really making money. The people that seem to be making the money very often are middlemen, people, the bigger guys that are just using these people in between. And I have also established that quite often, and I would agree with you, that that is a serious issue because there are people, bigger industries that are using these small industries that get paid by us for 30 days. But take 90 days to pay the smaller people. As a result thereof, the smaller people are not, businesses are really not in a position to survive. And if they do, it's the term that is normally used, hand to mouth. You know, just about survive and they will always remain the way it is, or there'll be no progress. If whether something could be looked at in that, if not already being done, to try and establish and make sure that our smaller industries survive and succeed. So, thank you.
No, Chair, thanks for responses. I just want to say, I believe that if a government department or a municipality does not have the capacity to provide the service internally, this is not a sufficient reason on its own for appointing external, you know, a provider.
what is the view of the commission on this? Because people just write and appoint outsource and say we don't have capacity. Is it a sufficient a reason for the government departments or municipalities to really outsource? Because we find those excuses. I don't believe this is really sufficient a reason for them to do that. And I would like to hear from the commission what is their belief on this one.
Let me start with the last one, Honorable Mashoba. In the recommendations we make in this report, we agree with you. We say it's not a sufficient reason to just say we don't have capacity. It should drill down to say, in the capacity we don't have, how likely are we to need this capacity continually? If you're going to need it continuously, then better employ, yes, establish it here, employ someone, make sure that it's done. But if it's something that you're going to need months off, also even there, make sure that in the contract that you engage with somebody you are taught, there is a definite skill transfer so that in future you don't have to be continually, you've got that capacity going forward. So we agree with you and we make that concrete recommendation. Honorable Shaikh, unfortunately our mandate wouldn't really allow us to drill down to that extent investigation. I would like to believe that maybe a three-way investigation in partnership with the Department of Trade and Industry, the Small Business Department that has just been established, and the Treasury, particularly the unit that has the central procurement, because they would have central visibility as to who actually is benefiting and what is the trend. I think that three-way partnership can actually do good to drill down in that work, and I think that it is very, very important and urgent to be done. Honorable Manana, what can be done about making sure that the SMEs are not just let into the wolves of the people who contract them, and knowing that they are not actually part of the deal? I'd like to, we've made a recommendation in our report that there ought to be a clause when people get work from government that forces them to declare when they don't have capacity in certain areas of the work that they've been given, to actually make that visible to the department so that when that happens, they then say they put an annexa in the agreement to say I'm short of these skills and I've since gotten so and so, so that people don't suffer, because this thing of not being known and the arrangement that you make afterwards, that's exactly what makes them suffer. But we are also making an additional recommendation to say once the department know about that and there is no unequivocal doubt that the work has been done, rather be put punitive measures for the people who have done it without processes, following proper processes, but for goodness sake, pay where you have evidence of what that has been paid. Pay the person who has done the work. Because often it's almost, the reason why I made an example about even the kind of caliber of people who find themselves caught in these arrangements, it's people who really work these systems every day. The accountants, they really believe the senior manager has said, it's okay, I must help with this. Obviously, they will do their backroom administration, dwells in and does the work and get caught up afterwards. So we're saying to the department, don't just look, you know, put your hands up and say this wasn't done. Deal with the person who did that, but where there is evidence of work that has been done, make sure that the person has been paid.
instead of just punishing everybody. So we're making those concrete proposals as well.
Thank you to the honourable member who has acknowledged the work of the commission. It is a product of the collective of the opposing commissioners. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. The I do want to say that it affects us, Commissioner, if you are frank with us in your reporting and in your responses as well. Because part of the responsibility of Parliament is to ensure that whatever is not correct, whatever is not right in the State Department is made right. And the only way of doing so is for us to be able to know what is going on and why. And that's why we appreciate your frankness, your openness. Even to the point of daring to say some people are just done again. It's not about policies and so on. It does help us. So we appreciate that a lot. I think that one of the issues that we must and as you hear members raising this issue of the SMEs and so on, one of the issues that we must put right in the department, in the State Department, all of them, is this issue of, in fact, it has got to be knocked into everybody's mind. It is this issue of the radical transformation of the economy, which must finally achieve inclusive growth. And so when contracts are given out, we must make sure that they achieve a purpose. If big guns in the industry are given contracts, they must declare who they are subcontracting. In fact, it must be one of the conditions. The condition of getting a government tender, a big government tender, is that you will subcontract. And if you do so, you must declare who you are subcontracting. And the issue must not just be subcontracting to provide cement here, sand there, a set of a T-shirt there, and a box of toilet tissue there. It should be the issue of the transfer of skills so that our SMEs themselves grow and become capacitated to deliver. Because you cannot have SMEs that remain SMEs forever and can't get into the economies of scale over time. That should be the objective. I used to say, "Asinabuba na nohema business abakazayo forever." Inga naikazi forever. Iya kula and become a man and a woman of nature. That's what we want to see. And so when we have this discussion, I say this because members will remember we raised this issue when we met the Department of Local Government and Traditional Affairs. And we raised the issue of the building of the social infrastructure. And that who is getting these contracts, and to what extent are we ensuring that we subcontract properly and transfer it? And we get a depressing, we got a depressing answer. I look around all the members here, regardless of political affiliation, I saw many depressed at the answer that we got. And so this is not what we would like to listen to. And I'm certain that every single member of this parliament, doesn't matter where, which party belongs to, would like to see this economy grow. And if it grows, it must grow because the rest of those who were disadvantaged in the past have become part of the mainstream of the economy. That's the bottom line. On that, we shall not relent. As the committee, because when we follow where the money of government has gone, we must also see who has it on the ground. We must also see whether the lives of our people are changing on the ground, not simply as recipients of services, but also as participants in the economy. That's the bottom line. So thank you very much for making yourselves available. Thank you for your input, and thank you for this engagement. Members, we have 2 sets of minutes. We will release the PSC so that we can finalize our internal business. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and Honorable Members. The rest of your
members, we have minutes of the 12th of May and the 13th of May. Let's take a look at those minutes, the first page. Just make sure that your name is correctly spelled and you are recorded as present if you were present. So that we don't go back to a political party saying we're upset in a meeting where you were. The next page, 2. Yes, Honorable Shikima.
1 for 12. I see it had not been corrected because I was present with it.
Up there.
Yeah.
All right. Secretary, I think we correct that. Honorable Shikimam is present. On the second page, anything that needs to be amended? No? Third page? Page 4. I hope members noticed that on page 4 there are 3 decisions that were taken which we need to follow up. Thank you very much. With the amendment as proposed by Honorable Shikimam, can we adopt the minutes? Anyone who proposes? Honorable Mana? Honorable Shekima?
Chair, I second the adoption.
Thank you very much. The minutes of the meeting. First page. Page. Two.
three. Then we have some decision recorded on page 3 on the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. Last page. Anybody move for adoption? Honorable Dr. Fick, move for adoption. Honorable Melungu, second. Thank you very much. Members, thank you very much for your attendance. The meeting stands adjourned. We meet tomorrow, on Friday, yes, on Friday 9, in Committee Room 514 to have deliberation with the Department of Water and Sanitation. Thank you very much. Sorry? No, we don't have a meeting tomorrow. Sorry? Well, the IPC are having a scan, I think.
Tomorrow is the house.
No, the reason why we don't have a meeting, we were supposed to meet those.